When I think of the contributions the Irish have made in the arts over the years, my initial thoughts go to literature and then to music. But Ireland's rich cultural and creative tradition includes the visual arts as well. Maybe it's tracing your finger inside a swirl that was carved into a stone by someone 5,000 years ago. Or viewing the painstaking labors of isolated monks who tended the fragile flame of literate life during Europe's dark ages. It might be an extravagance from colonial times, or a sophisticated mix of modern design with ancient symbols that adds a touch of grace to a contemporary building. All of this reflects the deep roots the arts have had in the Emerald Isle. To help us better appreciate the arts in Ireland, we're joined by Barry Maloney, an enlightened tour guide friend from County Cork, and by Roseanne Stringer, an art historian from the University of Kansas who's been guiding Americans around Ireland for more than a dozen years. Roseanne and Barry, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having us.
Now, pleasure to be here.
First of all, people do think about music and literature when it comes to the arts in Ireland. What would you advise if people want to get into the visual arts? Roseanne?
Well, the first thing I would do is, if you're going to start your tour in Dublin, I think that's where you want to base yourself and create a foundation for what you are going to experience throughout the rest of the country, because you're going to probably be going to a lot of archaeological sites and you're going to see them stripped down. And at the National Museum of Ireland, the archaeological museum on Kildare Street, you're going to see the richness of metalwork and ecclesiastical objects, as well as the very functional objects that people wore and adorned themselves with during, let's say, antiquity, the Stone Age.
So when you travel around Ireland, you're going to see, as you said, a lot of stripped down stone sites.
Yes.
That are just from 1,000 years ago, basically.
Or even earlier.
Even earlier.
Yeah.
And the treasures of those civilizations are in the capital city of Dublin in what museum?
The National Museum of Ireland.
Okay, so that's a very good advice. In fact, for a lot of cultures, hit the big museum in the capital before going out into the countryside. Barry?
Yeah, I totally agree, Rick, with Roseanne. And in fact, my favorite work of art in Ireland is in the National Museum. It's a small little gold boat. It's only about 6-7 inches long. And it's from 1,000 years ago, made out of beaten sheet gold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a miniature replica of a rowing boat, complete with oars and oarlocks and a little sail and a little mast. And we believe it was an offering to a sea goddess. It's just amazing to see. And I think you can really surprise yourself in Ireland. If you were to see this gold boat, you would assume it was a modern work of art made right now.
So the sophistication of a people 1,000 years ago in Ireland will blow you away. And you go to that National Museum. If my memory serves me correctly, though, the whole center of it is just gold.
Yes, the gold of Ireland.
The
and it goes back to over 2,000 years, over 3,000 years ago.
Is that right?
And there's a huge mystery as to where that gold came from.
Huh. Because it didn't come from Ireland?
Because we believe me, if we had gold now, we'd be digging for it, you know?
Yeah. So there's all that ancient gold in Ireland and nobody knows where it came from.
Well, recently there was some gold discovered actually in Croagh-Patrick.
Right.
In the 80s, 1980s.
Okay.
But the government refused to allow it to be mined because of its spiritual significance.
What is the famous brooch?
That would be the Tara brooch.
The Tara brooch,
mm-hmm.
T-A-R-A, Tara
mm-hmm.
brooch. Tell me about that.
It's incredible.
Well, that dates from around 700, and it is an object of adornment, and it is exquisite. It's richly decorated with gold leaf, bronze, and I think there's silver, and also there were probably precious and semi-precious jewels. Now, this would have been worn by someone of high rank within a community, but it signals that there were these incredibly skilled craftspeople who were at the beck and call of those with position and power.
Yeah,
and very
rich elites that could afford this kind of art back
then. And simply worn to basically keep your tunic and a garment underneath together.
So but it's a pin to hold your tunic
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
When we think of the history of Ireland, I'm just always sort of inspired by the whole notion of the Isle of Saints and Scholars. What do we mean by that, Barry?
Well, basically, cut a long story short, it was that the Dark Ages didn't really darken Ireland. We were just as bright as we ever were, you know? And that meant Christianity survived, and the most famous example is the Book of Kells, which is just what you were talking about, that gold, that fine gold work, but on paper.
So arguably the best piece of art from what we popularly call the Dark Ages of Europe, you know, between the fall of Rome mm-hmm. and the beginning of the High Middle Ages in about the year 1000, the best piece of art you could make a case was done in Ireland, the Book of Kells.
Yeah, done between Ireland and Scotland. And it is believed it was done by monks who were trying to create a work that the normal people would believe was the work of angels.
And when you look at it, you can imagine it. And
oh, yeah.
Illuminated means, you know, of course, part of the role of the monks was to transcribe, to write out these important books, mostly religious books, and then they would illuminate or decorate the title pages and the chapter heads and so on.
Yeah.
And that was really quite an art form. And if you want to see these manuscripts, well, the ultimate is the Book of Kells. Roseanne, where do you see that?
Well, you want to go to Trinity College and you want to go to the Old Library. And I think that it's probably the most visited site in Ireland. It's ranked at least in the top five. And you want to, I think, allocate enough time so that you can take advantage of this introductory exhibition that enlarges, blows up the very, you know, small, maybe 8 by 11 inch pages of these manuscripts, so you can see the intricacy of the detail and you can understand that this was something that these objects were not only precious and great lengths went to bring some very, very rich minerals and materials, the lapis lazuli for the blues that you'll see, but you also did not have the luxury of experimenting and making a mistake because you're working on vellum, you're working on calfskin. So the scribes and the artists had to be very, very skilled and adept at what they were doing. And you can get a sense of that in two videos and also in these enlarged images that adorn this introductory exhibition before you see.
And I want to echo that reminder to be patient, because when I go there, I'm just chomping at the bit to see the Book of Kells. But there's this wonderful exhibit beforehand that prepares you to enjoy the Book of Kells. And then when you actually see the Book of Kells, it's this precious book behind glass, just open up to two pages. And it's quite a tight little experience. But if you enjoy that whole preparation moving up to it.
Yeah, it's a moment trick. You got to slow down and live in the moment and not just, don't treat it like any other exhibit. Slow down. And also what I'd like you to do when you're in Dublin is surprise yourself, shock yourself. You know, take yourself from, walk out of Trinity having seen the Book of Kells, walk up O'Connell Street, go into the Hugh Lane Gallery and see the studio of Bacon, Francis Bacon, the painter. And it's quite a sight to see. Have you seen that studio?
No.
It's basically when Bacon died, he left his studio to the Irish state.
And remind us, who is Francis Bacon?
He's a modern Irish artist. He's most famously known for his paintings of popes.
Okay, so the point is you can be surprised that Ireland is more than old artifacts. Mm, You've got contemporary art.
And it's amazing what they did, because they took his studio and piece by piece, involving archaeologists, over 7,000 pieces, like tubes of paint opened, spilled onto the desk, they moved it to Dublin. Everything is labelled and in exactly the space as he left it.
Wow.
Now, and the studio's there. It's a work of art in itself.
And walking around Dublin, you can get so many different dimensions of the art history of Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's, right, a lot of people don't realise that Dublin was the second city of the British Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Georgian times.
Yeah.
In fact, I know all of us tour guides say, beyond the pale. We know that phrase. What do we mean when we say beyond the pale, Barry?
Well, the Pale was a region around Dublin, which got that name because there was a ditch.
That was kind of the green zone, wasn't it? That was where it was safe and comfortable.
Inside the Pale.
And if you go beyond the Pale, you're going to deal with these angry Irish people.
Yeah, yeah,
look out. Heaven help you.
Exactly. You're into where the chieftains ruled.
Oh, boy. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Roseanne Stringer and Barry Maloney about Irish art. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. Hugh's on the phone in Salem, Oregon. Hugh, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Doing well. You have a thought on Irish art?
Yes. We had the pleasure of taking a tour in 2009, and when we were in Dublin, we went through the National Gallery. We went downstairs and saw the giant painting of the Marriage of Strongbow and Aoife.
Hugh, it's a beautiful painting, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Amazing.
And it was a good background for learning more about the history of the time, and I was wondering if you could comment a little bit more on that painting and its significance in the ancient history of Ireland.
I'd be delighted, Hugh. It's the first thing that struck me when I first saw the painting is the sheer size of it.
What's the name of this painting again?
The Marriage of Aoife and Strongbow.
Marriage of Aoife and Strongbow in Dublin's National Gallery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the painter is Daniel MacLeish, another Cork man. I'm from Cork as well. Neighbour of mine, yeah. And it's about, I think it's about 10 feet high, maybe 16, 17 feet wide. And it's a marriage taking place on a battlefield. Now, there's a dramatic subject for a painting, if ever there was one. And in terms of its historical significance, it symbolizes the first steps of England into Ireland. You may have often heard people say that England ruled Ireland for 800 years. And when people are talking about that, the beginning of that time, they're talking about the Normans.
Right.
The first Norman to enter Ireland was Strongbow. He was invited in by a chieftain trying to get the edge on his rival. And in part of the deal, he promised his daughter Aoife's hand in marriage to Strongbow. Of course, Strongbow married Aoife and became the ruler.
So the Irish chieftain married into the Normans, basically.
Yeah, yeah,
basically. So he was corrupted. Or just seduced?
Well, corrupted to extent, well, and seduced, but after him then flowed thousands of more Normans into Ireland.
So that is very poignant from an Irish point of view, introducing 800 years of British
influence,
let's put it politely.
So it was a huge turning point. And one of the features of the painting you'd pick up is a harp. Right to the left of the painting is a harp. And if you look closely at it, you'll see the strings are broken.
Oh.
And he wanted to symbolise there that the harp usually is played to celebrate Irishness and the Irish spirit. And when the strings were broken, it was showing that this marriage, even though it was a happy event, was, you know,
it was
somehow
a bad omen, or is
somehow
the beginning
bad
of some
omen.
Trouble.
But of course, the painter was a romantic nationalist, and the real wedding took place in a cathedral. So he was, you know, putting it on the battlefield.
Speaking of that harp, talk about the importance of the harp to the Irish people, and when you're in Dublin, where you would see the most historic harp.
Oh yeah, the harp. Well, the harp in that painting, actually painted in the mid-1800s, is based on the one in Trinity College called the Brian Boru harp.
And that goes back 500 years or something?
Yeah, it goes back even further, I think about 700 years. Okay. And it's one of the three unique Irish instruments.
And that actual harp survives to this day. It's in remarkable
shape.
Yeah,
it's amazing to see. And you'll see it if you're going to see the Book of Kells that we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. You'll also see the harp upstairs in the long room.
And you'll see it if you go anywhere in Ireland on the back of the coin.
Oh, yeah, same
so this
harp.
This harp is a powerful thing.
We've even got it on the euro coin.
On the euro coin. And I think it frustrated a lot of monarchs in London, didn't it? I mean, they even outlawed the harp.
And if you look at the biggest business in Ireland, Guinness, what do you think of?
That's right.
The harp.
That's right. They've got the harp on there.
And a work of genius putting it on the glass. When the pint is being pulled, you see the white settle into black and the harp comes up, you know?
So you got to watch that harp as it changes as the beer fills the glass.
Yeah.
And then your Irish spirit swells.
I can see you're thirsting for a Guinness there.
If I could just say something, too, about the painting, which is subtle in many ways about this, basically a suppression of Irish culture. But Strongbow is standing on a symbol of the Celtic cross, which is, for many people, an icon of what they expect to see in graveyards and monastic sites throughout Ireland.
He's standing on a Celtic cross.
Yes.
That's
so
a powerful symbol.
It very much is. So I think, as Barry was saying, MacLise is definitely taking not just a historical image and building it up, but he's basically making a political statement.
And when
about
was this painting done, roughly?
Around 1880, I think, wasn't
it, Barry?
So this
is when Ireland is struggling for, in modern terms, it's sort of stirring things up to break away from, it was feeling its oats.
Absolutely, the hope
and
for
ready
home
to go
rule.
For it. And 40 years after there, they would have their independence, at least the Republic.
Absolutely.
So right here within the frame of a few blocks, we've got the harp, the Book of Kells, this great painting that sort of talks about the initiation of British control of Ireland. Powerful sightseeing right in Dublin. Hugh, thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Yeah, take care.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're exploring Irish art with Roseanne Stringer and Barry Maloney. Our phone number, 877-333-7425. John's on the phone in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. John, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Barry. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
I just want to tell all your listeners that the highlight every time we go to Dublin is to go to the National Gallery and to look at Caravaggio's The Taking, which, of course, is also known as Lost Painting. And it's a wonderful story about how it was found in a Jesuit dining hall. And having gone to Georgetown University, I have a pro-Jesuit stance.
So tell us more about that. What's the name of the painting again?
It's called The Taking or The Taking of Christ. And it was made by Caravaggio.
Right.
And it was lost. I mean, you know, Caravaggio is quite a character. I mean, you know, he had one of the popes was one of his patrons, but he was also a drunkard. He was a brawler, he was a womanizer. They even think he might have been a murderer. And he does this beautiful painting that just disappears for several hundred years. And Jonathan Haar wrote a book on it called The Lost Painting. It's just fascinating. And now it hangs proudly in the National Gallery.
Isn't it like a scene out of Scorsese, that painting?
Yes. And also, Caravaggio, being the devil that he is, painted himself in the painting.
Oh, true, yeah. He's on,
which
on
he
the
did writings. Frequently.
Right.
So that's an interesting topic, just great masters from European art in Ireland. We don't think about that too much. Roseanne,
right.
if you're going to Ireland, what would you?
Oh, I would definitely include a visit to the National Gallery, which is right within striking distance of the National Museum of Ireland. And uh-huh. it has an exquisite collection of European painting, not only Caravaggio, but if I can also say another rarity, a painting by Vermeer. There's a Rembrandt. There's Goya. There's Rubens. There's Van Dyck, Monet, Picasso.
Wow.
And if you want to immerse yourself in what we would think of as, let's say, the sort of Georgian colonial painting, you have an incredible collection of images that tend to romanticize the British occupation of, Ireland.
Done by Anglo-Irish
yeah,
people
Anglo-Irish
in
artists.
Dublin, probably living the privileged life.
Absolutely. And it's free, and it is so accessible, and it isn't overwhelming in terms of its size.
Right. Hey, John, did you get out of Dublin and into the West?
Yeah, we go to Galway every year because we're big Steve Earle fans.
Oh, nice. The Galway Girl. You know that song, The Galway Girl?
I've heard it 50, 60 times in concert.
Oh, nice.
Wow, nice.
And Steve makes Galway his second home when he's not living in New York now. And we try to go every year for just the music and the people, you know.
Great connection. And one character I'd like to lead you out of Dublin, if you like, is Harry Clark. He's Ireland's foremost stained glass artist. Mm-hmm. And therefore, his work is scattered all throughout Ireland, England, even in Europe. And he's famous for his bright blue and vibrant reds.
Incredible example of that in Dingle, right?
In Dingle, yeah.
You're in Dingle, which is such a rustic little fishing community.
Yeah.
You step into this church and you go in, and it's just a cathedral of incredible glass. From what age was that?
That'd be roughly 100 years ago.
100 years ago. What would he call that period?
Well, he's normally characterized as Art Deco, but I sometimes hate labels because I think his work is so unique. I mean, he elongates his figures, and as Barry said, he uses incredibly rich, saturated colors. But what he incorporates is an emotional content in his depiction of the faces. And I've had people who've gone into the chapel of the D-shirt, which was the Presentation Nuns Convent in Dingle, at one time, and they have come out in tears. They have been so moved by that emotional feeling that comes through in his depiction of these figures.
And he's a character that's pure Irish because there was two sides to him. There was his church work and his secular work. And the Irish state commissioned him to paint which was going to be his masterpiece, called the Geneva Window for the United Nations Geneva Building. And it was like a scene out of a movie. There was the moment when all the politicians gathered around the unveiling of this stained glass work.
Mm-hmm.
The curtains dropped and kind of polite coughs and and it never made it to Geneva because he depicted works from Joyce and O'Casey, drunken Irish nudity and, you know, the real...
It's honest.
Real life, real honest life. And guess what that stained glass work is now? University of Florida.
Mm. My goodness.
So,
all right. John, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Thanks, John.
World, boys, I ain't never seen nothing like a Galway girl.
Hey! There's a lot more to encounter of the arts in Ireland. Barry and Roseanne in just a moment. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And share your favorite artistic finds from Ireland with us on our website message board in the radio section at ricksteves.com.